You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
It's the Smucker's Uncrustables podcast with your host, Uncrustables. Okay, today's guest is rough around the edges. Please welcome Crust.
Thanks for having me.
Today's topic, he's round with soft pillowy bread.
Hey.
Filled with delicious PB&J.
Are you talking about yourself?
And you can take him anywhere.
Why'd you invite
him? And we are out of time.
Are you really cutting me off?
Uncrustables are the best part of the sandwich. Sorry, Crust.
Hi, I'm Bex.
And I'm Laura.
And we're here to talk openly and honestly about miscarriage, stillbirth, and all pregnancy loss.
We aim to smash the taboo surrounding these subjects.
And rebuild the topic in a way to support and educate women.
Rather than isolate and shame them.
Welcome
to the worst girl gang
ever.
This episode of The Worst Girl Gang Ever is being brought to you in association with Wednesday's Domain, a brilliant new alcohol-free wine brand.
Fed up of not being able to find a decent alcohol-free wine, the founder, Luke, set about creating Wednesday's Domain, a great-tasting, beautifully branded alcohol-free alternative.
When you remove the alcohol from a wine, you impact its taste, texture, and aromas. Rather than simply bottle what's left, you've got to take a different approach.
It's for that reason that they blend their wines with an array of natural flavours and ingredients to create something that pairs as well with a packet of crisps on the sofa as it does with a beautifully cooked meal shared with friends. Bex, you've tried the wines, haven't you?
I have. I tried them at the back end of last year and I was completely blown away by the taste. As loads of you know, I gave up drinking last year and the red wine is, I just craved it. The red wine is what really, red wine is what really got me and I've tried all of them. And then when I discovered Luke and Wednesday's Domain, I was like, right, this is it. It's do or die, and ordered a bottle. And it's so good. It's just like red wine. And also, it's not just that about when you're not drinking and you're sat at a table full of adults, you know, what is the alternative? So many people don't even have, it's like wine or water. Mm. And having that wine that you can take to a party with a beautiful label and a beautiful bottle, it just made me feel like a grown-up. Feeling part of the moment and part of the conversation are central to Wednesday's Domain's ethos, and we couldn't agree more.
And finally, you might be thinking, why on earth are they called Wednesday's Domain? Well, we asked the same question and loved the answer. They want to become your midweek wine alternative, providing you with all the joy that comes with opening a bottle and pouring a glass, yet none of the after effects you'd find in a regular bottle of wine.
If that's tickled your pickle, find out more at wednesdaysdomain.com and please take advantage of their 15% discount code GIRLGANG15, available until 31st of March 2023.
Welcome to this episode of The Worst Girl Gang Ever. Today, we are joined by Laura Amies, who is also known as Nanny Amies.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. So you're majorly TikTok based, aren't you?
Yes. I probably spend more time on Instagram.
Okay.
But TikTok it seems to get more traction. So it kind of looks like I spend more time over there, but actually I pile probably a bit too much time into my Instagram page.
I see. And tell us a little bit about what you do. Look, I nearly called you Amy then just because we were talking about it before we started recording. Tell me what you do, Laura.
So in a nutshell, I help parents tackle any really common challenges such as potty training or sleep disturbances, selective eating, major outbursts or regular major outbursts, because I've been caring for and working in family homes, well, for around 22 years. Or caring for children in some capacity for over two decades. So I've been able to kind of, I feel like I've been there, done that, seen it all. I've studied my entire life basically has revolved around childcare and child development. So if parents or families are struggling with something, they come to me, they tell me what's going on, and then I say, okay, yeah, so you've got A, B, C, and D. What you can do is 1, 2, 3, 4, and hopefully that should smooth things out. That's the long and short of it.
Okay. Wonderful. It must be a bit of a lifesaver for a lot of families.
Yeah, I'm incredibly lucky. I always sound so cheesy when I'm talking about my job, but I do feel really humbled every time somebody even considers asking for my advice. And then to get those kind of emails or calls back saying, oh my gosh, we all slept. Mm. I'm like, oh yay. It's a really lovely position to be in. So
that's so nice. It's so nice that you can look at it like that, because it is, I think it's quite a humbling experience for a parent to admit that they are struggling as well. Yeah. And it's quite difficult, makes you quite vulnerable. Yeah. To go, actually, my child is doing this and I don't know what to do. So it's really lovely. You can have that. You know,
even I'd say for the first a big chunk of my career, I didn't know any of that stuff either. You don't know it. You know, you keep children safe. You know that they need entertaining to some degree. You know they need a bedtime routine to some degree, and they need a bit of fresh air. But really, past that, what are we taught in terms of child development or child behaviours? So it's only through study and lots of experience. So a parent might have, you know, 2, maybe 3 children or 1, however many children you have. But that's obviously very, very individual to you and your little nest. But actually, if you spent time with 500 2-year-olds, it's then when you're able to start seeing patterns and, oh, okay, I get it now. That's why they're doing that. So I think it's actually quite rare that you can use that logical view towards child behaviour, because when you are in it and you are sleep deprived and you're just trying to survive, I don't think many people can, you know, see the answers, or even there's not always answers, but do you know what I mean? It's hard when you are so emotionally invested. So when a parent then thinks, I need backup, that is why I'm so humbled, because I would never ever take that for granted, especially when I'm invited into a family home. Really lovely.
Tell us how you became part of the gang.
So the first time, I didn't even realise I was part of the gang until somebody, I'd mentioned it on my social media and somebody mentioned you guys. And as soon as I just saw your name, I thought, oh my gosh, yeah, it was such a lovely feeling. So thank you for that before I delve in. But I almost feel a bit fraudulent when I talk about the first time, because it's such a strange, I'm sure it's happened to many, many people, but I was sat here in this office like I do every day, and I've been feeling quite emotional. I'm quite a sensitive person anyway, so my friends or my family will know me as a bit of a crier. And I'd cried quite a lot that day over the most silly things and little things, like when my husband and I met and we moved in together, he fetched a cat with him. And me and the cat don't necessarily love each other. I take good care of him, but we don't bond. And up in my office, I could smell the cat food from like down in the other, and I was crying because I could smell the cat food. I know, it sounds ridiculous.
Hate the cat.
And I'm like, why? I'm in my office. Why should I be smelling the cat food? And then I just started to think, hang on a minute. I'm starting to feel a bit queasy. Well, you know, do you know, all of these things start clicking into place. And then it made me think, oh my gosh, when was the last time I had my period? Realised I was 2 weeks late and we'd been trying. So I sat there suddenly thrilled that I could smell the cat food, because I thought, oh my gosh, I bet I'm pregnant. In that split second, I got up to do a pregnancy test and had the most horrendous stabbing pain. Like, you know, a period pain, but just a million times worse. Continued to the toilet, did a pregnancy test. It was incredibly faint. And then I spent the next week heavily bleeding. So I feel a bit fraudulent in some ways. I was pregnant, but I knew I was pregnant for a matter of minutes before the miscarriage started, if that makes sense. So yeah, it's really strange. I very much just cast it aside to a point of, well, yeah, I can't really be sad about it because I didn't know. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, but you can be. You can be sad about it because, you know, it was something that you wanted and you'd hoped for, and you were. So you're very entitled to be sad.
Yeah.
It's horrible that we're made to feel like we can't be sad.
Yes. And I don't know. In that instance, I don't necessarily think that that was kind of a societal thing. I feel like that was myself. There's people that have been through the most horrendous situations, and what I dealt with in my office for that week, it wasn't worthy of kind of a big fuss and a big upset. So I just very much kind of brushed it under the carpet. But looking back, I do think, I don't know if that was bravery or just a bit of denial, or perhaps a mixture of both. I can't really fathom it out in my own mind.
I think you don't feel like it was societal. I think it was. I think it is, because the reason you felt like you couldn't be sad about it is because no one else, you don't hear anyone else being sad about it. So society, because it's all like swept under the carpet and it's hush hush, it totally is a societal thing, because
yeah that does make
no
sense.
Platform for it.
Yeah, and actually it wasn't until my third miscarriage that I then found out about you guys. So I guess if I'd have been listening to your podcasts, or, you know, I'd been, because I got your audio book, if I'd have listened to that, perhaps, but I guess you wouldn't listen to it unless you've had a miscarriage.
Yeah.
It's that really strange limbo, isn't it?
I think what Laura's saying is right. It's like the way you felt was the way you felt because that's the way we're all taught to felt, the fact that society is the way it is. But I was going to ask you, if you could go back and discover that you were pregnant 2 weeks early, like just before your period was due, would you, or would you keep it? Would you rather have not known?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's a real, as you know, I have never thought about that. Given what I then did go on to experience with my third, and I did know and I had plenty of time to think about it, I would actually say that that first one was a really nice run up. It was a really nice way to ease me into the world of miscarriage. I actually wouldn't change it now. Because for whatever the reason is that I was able to kind of put, you know, the stiff upper lip on, it helped me in that moment not to kind of dwell. And I say dwell, I genuinely believe that everybody has to experience any level of grief or upset in a way that's really individual to them. And it does need kind of working through in your mind. But how I just tend to cope with things, I've had a few kind of, you know, upsetting things happen throughout my life. And I'm very much a, if I'm not incapacitated physically, I need to just get up and get on with it. And just deal. I'm very much a, nope, let's go. We're all fine here. Let's ship shape. And I'm not saying that's the right way to deal with it. It's just conveniently how I deal with it. So yes, the first one helped me in the way that I generally process things anyway.
So what happened, you know, take us through what happened next.
So then I kind of had that, okay, so I've done a little bit of research and, okay, well, this is really common. It's really common. Nothing to worry about. Yes, it's happened, but, you know, let's kind of crack on. As I said, let's just keep going. And then a very similar thing happened with the second one. That one was much more physical in the sense that it pretty much the same thing, but with my husband and I had taken his mum out for the day to a neighbouring city, and the most inconvenient upset tummy occurred. Now, we all know that when there's public toilets involved, it's just horrendous. And it wasn't until I got home, we had to cut the day short. We got stuck in a traffic jam on the way home. I was sat with a carrier bag on my knee the whole time thinking that I'd got a stomach bug. And then I don't know. I feel like this one is a bit too graphic to talk about, I have to be honest. I passed something into the toilet that I actually can't describe. Mm. It led to much Googling, very strange and very unlike the first one, but it had the same thing with the pregnancy test. So that happened. And then I was very much, do you know what? I'm not in the market for this. I don't think I'm supposed to be a mum. This is, you hear stories of women that have so many of these instances, and I just cannot imagine the strength that takes. So I was kind of saying to my husband, I just don't think, if this is what will happen each and every time, I'm just so sorry, I can't do it. So we took a bit of a break. And then, you know, time is a good healer, isn't it? So we thought, okay, let's try again.
Was your husband on the same page as you at that point? Or was he like, no, come on.
So my husband has pretty much wanted us to try for a baby from the day we met. Well, that makes me sound like a real keen bean. Not quite to that extent, but he's 6 years older. So he's 46.
Okay.
I'm 40. So from the perspective...
Are you? 40? Bloody hell. You look amazing.
I just turned 40 a couple of weeks ago. So obviously that's a massive thing. That's a whole other topic. I have really been career focused, and yeah, I've had opportunities in my career. So, sorry, I'll go off on a million tangents. Call me back in. But when we got married, which was 5 years ago, obviously then we were saying, okay, let's start trying for a baby. But I was still very much, I was still almost like a living nanny. We didn't see each other very often. And I knew I'd have to leave my nanny family if I were to fall pregnant. And I wasn't quite ready for that. I adored the family that I was caring for at the time. And just the thought of moving myself fully out of that home was heartbreaking. So, you know, I said, you know, why don't we literally have a year or two of just being married, and just, we were living in London at the time, just let's just be. And he was really happy to, you know, to have that. But he, the whole time, he was very much, you know, time's getting on, and more so for him. So then we decided, yeah, okay, that, yeah, I agree. I've kind of put it, that sounds really bad. I felt like I'd put it off, but I really had this zest. I didn't, because of what I did for a living, I was offering 24 care around the clock. So as wonderful as that is, I know only too well what that means for your life. And I still very much clung to my, I used to get 36 hours off a week in a chunk. And I clung to those 36 hours with all I had. I would go places, I would go to brunches, I would go out. I would literally, you couldn't have crammed more into 36 hours than I did. And I think because of that, it gave me a little bit of an apprehension towards, do you know what I'm saying? It was...
Yeah, because you can't do that when you're a parent. You can't 6 hours off and go for brunch. It's certainly in the early days, it's not possible. So I totally get what you're saying.
And can I say, I know that there are more important things in life than brunch. I know that.
Are there, though? Because I'm questioning that.
Almost. Great. Anyway, we kind of got to this point where, yeah, I said, you know what, that we've had a couple of years living in London. This is lovely. And then I was offered a wonderful opportunity to take part in a little TV programme. And I just couldn't turn it down. And I just said to my husband, I could cry actually thinking about it, because I was younger. So perhaps things wouldn't have happened the way that they've happened. It's a horrible guilt that I literally cart around in a big bag on my back every single day since. But I knew I couldn't have done it if I was to fall pregnant. So I felt like that was an opportunity I couldn't turn down. So we did decide together that I would be silly to turn it down. But I didn't really know what was involved in filming, and, you know, I'd never done anything in TV before. So it was a really long process. So it ended up kind of putting us back like almost a couple of years. And then horrendously, it's probably really embarrassing to admit actually, but hey ho. Then once it was getting ready to the programme airing, I suddenly said, oh my gosh, what if I'm offered a second series? I can't be pregnant for a second series. To which my husband is obviously rolling his eyes at this point. I mean, he should have just left me in the wind at this point. I'm making myself sound really selfish, but it's, you know, it's just an opportunity that, and I was 36, so I still felt like I had lots and lots of time. And anyway, I kind of waited and waited. The second series never came. Then we moved and all of these things. So it's just kind of been very much a long journey to get to the point where I can really wholeheartedly say, I am trying for a baby.
Yeah.
So with that comes a lot of guilt, and probably all the more reason why perhaps now I'm psychoanalyzing myself, why I wouldn't have gone on and on to my husband about the fact that I'd known I was pregnant for 5 minutes before I lost it, because that wouldn't have been fair on him either. Mm. So I've had two of those instances. And then back in April, a very similar thing, all the signs, took the test. Pregnant, a big, thick, healthy line on that pregnancy test, completely unlike the others that I'd had. And my husband actually works away throughout the week. And I knew I didn't want to tell anybody before I told my husband, but I didn't want to tell him over the phone. But I was kind of left in this quandary thinking it might go away. So I don't want to necessarily make a big fuss out of it. But when he comes home on a Friday night, absolutely shattered, I don't just want to say, hey, we're pregnant. So I went and made this little kind of scene in the bathroom with a little tiny jumper that says, you know, my daddy's the best. And I put the pregnancy test on top and a little sign that I use actually in my office here saying, mummy has something to tell you. It's so corny, so cheesy. And then I just waited and waited for him to come home that day. Usually the first thing he does after a long drive is dash to the bathroom. As you can imagine, he'd gone to the bathroom right before he got home. So I was sat in the living room kind of thinking, do you need the toilet, love? You don't need the toilet. Can I give you a drink? I'm trying to fill his bladder up. Hours later, he went to the toilet and found this little scene. And this, I don't know if I've ever seen a bigger smile. Oh. I'm actually not crying for me. I feel sad for him.
Mm. Yeah. It's horrible, the guilt that you have around other people. So, I mean, you can feel guilt for all sorts of things, but I think when you see in the faces of other people how much it means to them, you can't help but sort of, well, personally, hate yourself a little bit and be annoyed at your body and all of those things. It's really difficult.
It is. And I am honestly such a logical person. And I'd be the first one to, I hope, to give somebody some, like, just like what you've just said there, some really, you know, heartfelt and logical advice. But when you are in that point, it's just so hard to use it on yourself, isn't it?
Mm.
So... Absolutely. Yeah, so, but it was lovely, and I'm glad I did that, because I felt, you know, obviously we'd not had that chance with the other two. And then, yeah, everything was brilliant. I felt brilliant. I'm a bit sick here, and I've just felt, I don't know, how I kind of thought you would, knowing that something's growing inside of you. It's something I'd never really thought about. And then... I talked to my mum and I told my best friends, but obviously we don't possibly tell anybody else, do we? Bearing in mind, I still hadn't found you guys yet. So I was very much in the, we don't talk about it unless we get to 12 weeks. I was being very, very well behaved and went about my day-to-day business and travelled, because I'm up in Yorkshire now, travelled down to London to do some sleep training, which had been scheduled in, and I was feeling completely fine, so it wouldn't have ever crossed my mind to cancel it. Not when there are tired parents waiting for me, no way. And yeah, I think it was on my third day I started getting tummy cramps, and I just thought, oh god. But there were nothing in the beginning, there were nothing like what, like, the others had been real stabbing pains. So I thought, you know, after you do a bit of Googling and it can be quite normal to feel cramps. So I wasn't worried, totally fine, I'm telling myself. Said goodbye to that family, and then I was due to go and visit another family. And on arrival, literally as I was walking through the door to the other family, I felt like I'd come on my period. And I knew that was a bad sign. And it was a family that I'd actually, I knew quite well. And I dropped my bag, said a quick hello. I said, I just need the bathroom. And as I'm walking to the bathroom, I just felt, hopefully it's only ladies listening, but you know, if you were on a heavy period and you can feel that you're passing things, I felt something pass. And you couldn't write this. And the lady that this happened with, I love, she meant no harm. But as I was walking to the bathroom, she literally put her hand on my tummy and said, when are we going to have a baby, Laura? I was like, oh, hopefully soon. Went into the toilet and found, you know, what we all dread to see when we go to the toilet and we know we're pregnant. So that was really tough. That one I did let myself have time to work through. And, you know, that took weeks. I was hospital trips and things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was back in May. And
sorry, Laura, just when that awful, awful experience happened, were you able to tell the mum that you worked for what had happened?
And yes.
She must have been mortified as well about that comment.
I was the main concern. It was really, and do you know what? I couldn't have been, if I was, in terms of being away with work, I really couldn't have been in a better place. I'm really grateful for that. All families I work with are wonderful. But obviously, if you are in a family home for the very first time and you don't know a family particularly well, I would rather take an issue to my grave than have to say to a family that are already in need, I need to go, I am not well. I would just dread, and touching wood as I say that. But luckily, I knew this family and I left early. There was no question about that. The train journey home was horrendous. Absolutely. Like having to lug my case, being on my own. And then it was really strange because whilst I was in the family home, whilst I was being very honest, I was still not showing that emotion. I thought, just get home and we'll deal with it when we get home. And also I'd been on the phone to the midwife. So the midwife has said, you know, of course it's not ideal, but it don't fear the worst. She was being, you know, trying to give me that hope. So the whole time I'm kind of telling myself, you know, it doesn't necessarily spell the end. It's okay. And then my husband came to pick me up from the station, and because I was in such agony on the train, I'd had this idea that I would perhaps just collapse into my husband's arms and tell him what horrible ordeal I'd had. But as soon as I saw him, that same facade of, yeah, so it's not too bad. It's okay, because I didn't want him to feel bad. Mm-hmm. So that's quite lonely in the, I can say this because he'll never listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. This is actually really therapeutic. If he was listening, he would say, you silly thing, you can always tell me what you're thinking. But there was no way I needed or I wanted him to join in that pain, either physical or emotional. So I dealt with a lot of that really privately. And that's when I started talking about it online. And then somebody said, I think it might have been on TikTok, actually. Somebody said, have you heard of, you know, the worst girl going, oh, no. And yeah, here we are.
I think so. When you start talking to someone else about your fears and your if they it's almost like a self-preservation thing, in the fact that if they join in with your anxiety, you're like, oh my god, this is real, yeah. Because they're worried, and if they're worried, there must be something wrong. Do you know what I mean? I think
absolutely
often I do that. I keep everything to myself, because if someone else put a suggestion of like, are you sure that this is okay, I'd be like, oh my god, it's not. And obviously in your case, yeah, it wasn't, but it's that kind of, I can make this all right if I don't talk about it. You know, yeah, that kind of crazy self-preservation, I'm coping, therefore it's fine type attitude.
Absolutely. And I think it's like I was saying at the beginning, if you are naturally that kind of character in life, or if you're the kind of person that people come to you for advice, I think whatever dilemma you then go through, that comes through. it's kind of like an extended versions of ourselves. So whatever we're going through in life, we go through within our own characters, don't we? That sounds really obvious, but it's not until you start picking it apart. That in day-to-day life, I try to put a front on it. So for the others, for sake of others, and like you just said, to convince myself that things are okay. So inevitably I was going to do that with the miscarriage. But it's a disservice, because it should be something that you share. Definitely. I would absolutely give, if anybody's was to be listening to this, as I am giving a speech now, but if you are listening to this and you're going through it, I would urge you to talk to somebody, talk to your partner, you know, about it, because it is a shared miscarriage while you're physically going through it. It is a shared miscarriage, isn't it?
So you said you started talking about that. That was the point you started talking about it on social media. So in what way did you start sort of talking and opening up?
I suddenly felt I had this real bee in my bonnet about, I was probably just directing the grief at something, about this whole 12-week thing. I kind of, just silly things like that. The lady that innocently put a hand on my tummy whilst I was miscarrying, she wouldn't have done that because if I'd have been able to tell her, she'd have known that I was pregnant. I kind of just feel like, why? I don't know. It was based, I think, via a negative emotion in just kind of wanting to get this out. Hey, ladies, we don't need to wait 12 weeks if you don't want to. I mean, if you'd like to, and we all know about the statistics and we know about the chances, but I don't think it should, there should be this rule or an unspoken rule. It should just be your own personal journey. So I wanted to talk about it because I know anything I post on social media will result in a form of DM, whether that's me talking about a sleep disturbance, the amount of, and I say mums because it's 9 out of 10 times it is a mum that will send me a DM saying, I'm so pleased you posted that. I really did think we were the only ones that were waking up at 2, 3 and 4 a.m. So I knew that the same thing would be happening with, you know, a miscarriage. I'm obviously not the only woman to have suffered from it. And the DMs and emails and comments, my gosh, they were amazing. And that's the gang, isn't it? That's really amazing. And so many people were grateful to me for broaching it. But I was like, no, I'm so grateful to you for that. You know, that interaction, because it is such a lonely thing to go through. So actually there is nobody better to speak to about it than somebody that has physically been through it as well as the emotional side of it. So I'm really glad I did broach it, and kind of said to myself, if I fall pregnant again, once I've told my husband and my mum, I'm going to tell Instagram. So try and break this habit, you know. And obviously, because I kind of think, even if I didn't, if I waited until 12 weeks, whatever happens with the next pregnancy, if I was to fall pregnant again, I would talk about it anyway if it did result in a miscarriage. So I think, you know what, I'm going to just talk about it from day one. In fact, I'll probably make a TikTok of me taking out the pregnancy stick out of the box. Pregnancy test. So, yeah.
It's such a kind of personality driven thing, isn't it? Because you can't, like, I think a lot of it is because obviously the risks of loss are higher before 12 weeks. And that's the reason that we wait to 12 weeks, because the risk of loss is so high before, or much higher before 12 weeks. And for the people that I told, I felt like a dick. I felt like such an idiot. Like, how can you have been so, but that is, this is again, it's a societal thing, isn't it? Because we wouldn't think like that. We wouldn't feel
no
like
one thinks she's a dick, do they?
No one thinks you're an idiot for losing a baby.
No.
But it's like this kind of inbuilt, like, you know, and I remember when I was walking down the garden with my hand on my tummy, just thinking, oh, what an idiot. How could you have not known? But it's just this such an inbuilt kind of shame that you feel.
Yeah.
Or hoping. It's almost like an ego thing. You feel like your ego just goes, oh, I don't know.
I don't think it's ego. I think that is literally your instincts. Ultimately, we are put on this planet to reproduce. If, you know, if we think about our instinctive nature and the fact, take away all this, you know, modern world, the fact that I'm sat here in a laptop speaking to you guys, wherever you are, we are still animals. We are here to reproduce. So I think that's part of our nature to kind of get that feeling and want to do nothing but celebrate it. I genuinely believe that is inbuilt in us. But I think if you're not the kind of character that would openly talk about miscarriage, which is completely your prerogative, then you wouldn't be the kind of person perhaps then to talk about it pre-12 weeks. So I would totally respect and understand that completely. But I think just because I will talk about it, it just clicked in my mind. And I think, well, if I would talk about it whenever it would happen, therefore I may as well flip it on the other side and kind of announce a pregnancy as well. Do you know what I mean? And perhaps it is a bit silly and naive, but...
I know what you mean. I always found it easier to tell people that I'd miscarried if they already knew that I was pregnant versus telling people that, oh, we were pregnant and now we're not.
Yeah, that's a lot of information, isn't it?
Like, I felt like people were more invested and they cared more when they knew that we were pregnant first rather than, oh, she said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I suppose what I meant was like, what is it that stops us? What is it that stops us telling us? Is it our egos? What is it that makes us feel stupid for being hopeful? Is it our egos that we feel stupid? Is it, are we worried about what other people think of us when we...
It's
difficult, isn't it? It's a really difficult situation and everyone is so different. Because even if I had another baby, I don't know that I would tell people before 12 weeks. I don't know. It's such a difficult thing to kind of call, because then there's a whole lots and lots of people believe that it's superstitious, so they don't. It might, like, from a kind of, I can't remember the right word, like a realistic point of view.
Yes.
You know, like rational point of view, you think, no, okay, I know that telling someone I'm pregnant is not going to tempt fate. But when you're in that situation, it's very real. And if that feels very real to you, you should treat it as real, because that's what you're honouring your inner thoughts, aren't you?
Absolutely.
And if you feel superstitious and you shouldn't do it, then maybe don't do it, you know. But but we just, at the worst girl gang ever, we say, do what feels right. If that's telling three or four people that you've really, we urge people to tell two or three, four people, if you don't, you know, if you're not going to tell everyone, because you do need someone to support you. You do need that support network. If the worst happens, which has happened to us all, right? We know what that feels like.
Yeah.
Need that person to phone and say, I've lost the baby, rather than phone and say, hi, yeah, I was pregnant. Yeah, but now I'm, no, I'm not pregnant anymore. That's an impossible conversation. Yeah. So as long as you've got those people in place, the important ones, the ones who you know, you can phone and go, it's happened, or terribly, it's happened again, they will be there for you 100%. And I think that is what's most important. Whether you choose to tell everyone or not, that is the important thing, that you have the support there when you need it.
Yeah, completely. And I'm sure my thought process is different, because I do live so much of my life on social media. I mean, not all of it by any stretch. I keep lots and lots to myself and to my husband. But I think every day I consider what content I'm going to post and or what direction I'd like to take, you know, certain things in. So I'm sure I would think completely differently if my life was different. It's like you just said, everybody's journey is completely individual and we're all influenced by our environment.
And you take, obviously, as you just said, you know, you spend a lot of your time in social media. So you take a great support from your followers on social media, right? That is your support network, and you can tell them and turn to them and say, this is happening. And you'll get those DMs and you'll get that support, which obviously has meant so much to you in the past. And that's really important to kind of recognize and do what suits you as well.
Yes. Yeah, and I have this really, no, it's not, I was about to say it's really silly, but it's not, because actually lots of people think this, but I truly believe in manifestation. And I had this little idea in my mind. I thought, gosh, imagine, I don't think I'm magic. Let me just check. Everybody knows I'm really logical. But I think that you can, the power of positive thought, I really believe, can have a big impact in your life, even if it just means that it's driving you to go and get something. I'm not suggesting that I can bring in all of this, you know, positivity. It's kind of driving me to go get it. But I did also have this thought that, gosh, imagine if instead of just telling everybody that you'd lost it and everybody sending you all of that love and, you know, that heartfelt just bundle of loveliness that comes through the DMs, what if you had all of those hopes and dreams for the pregnancy?
Mm-hmm.
And it would, of course, when it comes down to nature and science, it's not going to matter diddly squat. But it was just a little that thought I had in my mind one day. Well, wow, I wonder what if that could make, I don't know, it's really strange. I think it was ever since somebody wrote, I remember a comment, and I don't remember the exact words, I just remember two words from the lovely comment, and it was something along the lines of, I am sending you just the loveliest baby wishes. And it was just something about that comment. I just thought, oh, it's just lovely. And she had the courage to refer to future babies. She, in her mind, was, Laura will have a baby. And that's obviously a whole other topic, because I know that while we're going through a miscarriage, you don't always want to think about the future and trying again. But the fact that she'd owned this comment, and she put, you know, the little emoji with like the sparkly emoji, it was just really stuck in my mind, and that was getting me thinking, gosh, just, it would just be lovely to have everybody come along on the journey with me no matter what happens next time.
I think it can make a difference. I think it can, like you say, it probably is not going to make a difference to the sciencey stuff and what's going on with the baby itself, but it can really help your mindset and make the experience a lot nicer.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know this, whether this is right or wrong. I'd actually really love your opinion on this. But I have, rightly or wrongly, said to my husband, I've got one more chance in me. I can't sign myself up to an eternal if, but, and maybe situation. And because of our age as well, you know, I'm really pragmatic with that. But I don't know if that's kind of then putting too much pressure on if it were to happen again. But I can say in my mind, okay, I'm happy to start trying again, because we haven't been. I could, that May, what happened in May was just too much. So we've recently kind of said, okay, I think I'm feeling like I can get my head around it, but I've got literally one last chance. And everybody in my personal life, everybody I've told that to, No, you can't say just what. No, you've got to have a baby, Laura. You of all people need to have a baby. You can't say that. But I think the only people that have said that to me perhaps have not had that really horrendous physical and emotional experience. Because I think if you have been through that, you wouldn't tell somebody to just keep going. But I wrong? I don't know.
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because I think a lot of these people who are saying, go on, I can't, no, you have to keep going. And we have this a lot in our group, our Facebook groups recently, and we put a ban on toxic positivity for this very reason. Because for some people, a rainbow baby is not just around the corner, and that's okay. And that's something that we very much have to cope with and deal with and manage. But I think a lot of these people who say, come on, you can do it, are doing that for them. Because the idea of you not having a baby is too sad for them to comprehend themselves. And I think it's, you know, that kind of, that narrative that we've grown up with, that if you put in the work, you will get the result you need. And with fertility, it's just not the case. It's not always the case. But we don't recognize that because we've grown up with this Disney narrative. Mm. So we're so ill-equipped to deal with the less than perfect option, or the one that we didn't choose first. But actually, there's so much out there. Like, we've done loads of podcasts for people who are trying to come to the decision to stop trying, which is an equally as difficult decision as to keep going, right? You know that. You've been through it. But that's what we need to get on board with, is the fact that there are other options out there. There are other options out there. And stopping trying does not mean in any way, shape or form that you did not want a baby enough, because there are more things at play here. There's mental health, there's finances, there's your relationship. All these things are completely fucked when you go through this horrible experience of loss and recurrent loss and IVF and all this stuff. You know, it all comes into play. So to make that decision is sometimes the healthiest decision that you can make as an individual and as a couple, and that needs to be respected. And if you can, you know, if you're listening to this and you are having, like Laura, these people that go on, it's just around the corner, you just got to keep trying, keep going, you need to find out a way to respectfully say those, or not even respectfully, that's up to you, tell them to fuck off for all we care. You need to kind of find a way to say, this is not perhaps an option for me anymore. I can't cope with this anymore. Our relationship is struggling because of this. We can't afford to. Please stop asking me. Please stop telling me that something is going to happen when you don't know that. We don't know that. And it might, you know, but I might be just a shell of a person by the time I have, you know, by the time this thing that might not actually happen does happen, that I'm not in a fit state to kind of be there anyway. There's so much more that we have to think about when we tackle this subject. Sorry, passionate rant. Done.
No, absolutely. I am all hail. It's so true. And I think you feel when you say to somebody, I need to stop trying. It's that whole mixture, isn't it? You feel a bit defeated. You feel it's that thing. I wouldn't want people to think that, oh, well, I didn't want one anyway. And I don't know, probably weighs heavy on me because of how much I did kind of postpone the trying. So I always worry, particularly my husband, that he thinks, well, you probably didn't really want one anyway. So that's probably some guilt that I really need to unpack. I need to do some work on that. But life...
Who doesn't think that?
Yeah.
You know that as well, don't you?
I know. But I do, even though I am, you know, really level-headed, I do think, well, perhaps, Laura, if you had have tried when you were 35 or 36, this wouldn't have happened.
Maybe it's done, isn't it?
I know, completely. It's done. It's dusted. This is my reality. But I think even in the most, you know, logical of moments, you can't help it, can you? Basically, it's just there in the background, and I'm absolutely certain it is something my husband wouldn't think. It's my little issue, basically.
We've had times of where we've talked about, are we going to do it again or not, and you know, this is the last chance, you know, that sort of thing. And what has made it a little bit easier for me is when I first started having that as an option. So before, it was just like, keep going. We'll get there in the end. Whereas now it's like, because that was an option that was on the table, it didn't seem as scary. And so I sort of opened the door a little bit and let it creep in as an option, and try to imagine what our life would be like, and try and think of the positives and the benefits. And the more I thought about it, and the more I actually had it as an option, the less scary it became. So, but the other thing I wanted to ask you is, have you had any testing now that you've had three miscarriages?
Yes. So I've had, I really love the NHS. Really, I have only ever had good things to say. But I very recently saw a fertility doctor and walked out in floods of tears, because I've never in my life met anybody so abrupt, verging on rude. Really, I found the whole scenario, I was shocked. So it's not been the best. I have had, I've had colposcopies, things. I've had tests. I've had, I've even had an MRI, but not actually for the fertility, because I have too much information. I have IBS, and sometimes it's quite debilitating. So I had an MRI, which would have shown up any, you know, significant issues in that area, because it was all over my abdomen. So from a physical perspective, they don't think there's anything wrong at all. So it leads them to believe it's genetic. I was just, you know, one of those things. The next step is obviously then getting my husband tested. But it was just such a horrible, it was a really horrible appointment that I kind of walked out of there thinking, God, I don't think I'm in the market for that either. I don't know what I'm in the market for, but... You know,
I'm sorry you've had that experience. It's just, we need to do better.
Oh, and I did
this seriously. You know, they've got the education, they've got the know-how.
Yeah,
and they're going at their most vulnerable.
Oh, shocked!
Anything other than with absolute kindness and comfort and compassionate is not okay.
No, I was really surprised, and I thought, gosh, because me and my best friend, we speak via video. We don't get to chat that often, so we'll like record a video. It's like FaceTime, but one-sided FaceTime that you do in your own time. So we just send each other little snippets, and I came out of the hospital, and I must have ranted for about 5 minutes going on, and he said this, and it was like, and that's probably, it's really therapeutic to be able to do that. And I actually said, you know, I do consider myself to be a bit of a tough cookie. So I'll have a moan, I'll have a bit of a cry, and then I'm able to think, right, I won't say any bad words, but kind of get that, leave that guy behind and onwards. And I just thought, goodness me, if somebody was literally at their lowest ebb, which is highly likely in that office, and he would have spoke to them that way, I cannot imagine what that would have done to their well-being, to their whole being.
It's not acceptable, is it?
No. And I did try to call the like the patient liaison people 3 times to complain when I was in the height of my upset, but kept getting the answer phone. I was like, no, I need to speak to a real person. I'm not leaving a message. But then as the time went on and they didn't pick up the call, I thought, oh, forget it. So I've not even made an official complaint, which I really wanted to, because it was just so wrong.
So anyway. what's the plan from here? Is there any follow-up or?
I have a telephone appointment with a different fertility clinic in January. So we'll see what comes of that. I'm definitely in a place now where I think, okay, we can start trying or seeing what happens. And then part of me just think, you know, maybe Laura, it's a bit silly to be trying. Maybe you do need to just do a bit more investigating first. But I am very much a what will be kind of person. And I don't know if perhaps that's a bit silly given the circumstances, but I would just rather, if possible, let nature take its course. And of course, that's a silly thing to say. We would all just prefer to let nature take its course. But with anything in life, I always follow my gut instinct. And my gut tells me it's time to start trying again. And this is the last time we'll start trying. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay, as okay as you can be with that.
Yeah. Oh, well, we wish you so much luck.
Thank you.
We'll be keeping an eye on your Instagram.
Yes, I will. I'll let you know. Oh, yeah. Keep your eye out. I'd definitely be joining people in for the journey, whatever happens.
Thank you so much for being so honest as well. It's really refreshing to hear such an honest account of what happened. So thank you.
Thank you so much to you guys for all that you give us ladies. You're amazing, both of you. Thank you.
You're very welcome. It's our pleasure. Keep in touch. We'll keep an eye on your Instagram and TikTok. And yeah, hopefully chat soon.
Thank you so much. Lovely to meet you. Bye.
Yeah, best. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. And please, please, when you have a second, rate us, review us and share us. And let's get this taboo smashed. See you next week.